I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 4, text number 34, Transcendental Knowledge. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatva darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of the disciple succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciple succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciple succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is a fashion of foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. Path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only one should hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive, is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatva darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadyade Satarane. So again, is anyone here for the first time? Second time? There's always a second time. Here's something about the qualification of becoming a disciple, as well as the qualification of becoming a spiritual master. Spiritual master means master of the science of Krishna consciousness, which means that one becomes a servant master, because in Krishna consciousness, only Krishna is the master and everyone else is a servant. So when one becomes a master in Krishna consciousness, one becomes a servant rather than the master. Everyone else is trying to become a master, and the devotee, including Krishna in his form of Lord Chaitanya, is trying to become a servant. So when we perfectly become a servant of the previous spiritual master, then we become a master of being a servant. The reason why one would want to become a servant of the previous master is that the previous master is a servant of the previous master before him. And it goes all the way back to the original actual master, Krishna. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago. It wasn't a secret. He spoke it openly to Arjuna, and it was heard by Śrīla Vyāsadeva, and it was recorded by Śrīla Vyāsadeva in part of the Mahabharata. And it's an open for everyone if one wants to become a servant of the Supreme. Now, servant we have to be, as I said before, either we become servants of the Supreme or we become servants of the illusory energy in the form of our own personal material bodies or minds or the extensions of those bodies of mind, what we call our family, our society, our friendship, our country, etc. Servants we have to be. Unfortunately, we, instead of taking Krishna as being the Supreme, we take other things to be the Supreme. As I've said in a lecture before, in the morning we look into the mirror and we ask the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the greatest of them all? And of course the mirror answers, my dear fortunate soul, after so many births and deaths you've gotten to see the supreme deity within the mirror, which is revealing itself to you now. It's giving you personal darshan of the Supreme. So now you must vow to render unalloyed, uninterrupted service to this deity. And being a very faithful servant, every soul is a very faithful servant. So when we become a faithful servant of this material body and mind, then the result is, immediately, if we're a little pious, we perform abhishek to the deity by taking a shower or a bath. Then we make an extensive effort to clothe the deity, decorate the deity, put perfume or aftershave on the deity. Then we feed the deity, and then we go out into the world to spread the glories of this deity all over the world. Our personal sankirtan. So in this way, everyone is a very faithful servant. Unfortunately, as it says, kamadinam katida palitas dorni deshas te shamayijata na karuna no prasanti. That although we're faithfully serving bodies, material bodies, life after life, they never appreciate our extensive service. As a matter of fact, there comes a time, in spite of our loyalty and our devotion, the body kicks us out, tells us to get another job. We become unemployed for some time until we get our next worshipable deity in the form of another material body. And no matter what service we've rendered to this deity, it's never satisfied. It is not that if we sleep our required 8 hours, what people think is required, then the deity says, all right, you don't have to sleep anymore. No, usually the deity says, 8 hours? Why not 10? What about 20? 25? Try for 25. It's never satisfied with our service. And we're never ashamed of whatever we do. We can do the most abominable thing and we get used to it. It becomes normal. 5,000 years ago, when the sages heard that someone, a Shudra, in the dress of a king was actually beating a bull, they couldn't believe it, that such a thing could go on. Nowadays, in India, they worship the cow. People can't believe it. Why are they not eating it? Why are they worshiping it? So people get worse used to the most abominable activity and they think it's completely normal. As a matter of fact, they think it's what should be done. And the opposite, what is actually religious principles, they think that's exactly what you're not supposed to do. Therefore, we have to, if we want to understand what is our real value and our real benefit in life, we have to first inquire as to who am I? Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions in more than one place that we're not the body, that we're a spiritual soul, and the soul is very tiny. The body is big, and Krishna is even bigger. So as a spiritual soul, and Krishna gives us the proof of the existence of the soul by explaining that whatever body we have now, and whatever bodies we've had in the past, and whatever bodies we get in the future, they're all temporary. But we, the experiencer of all these temporary bodies, we're always the same experiencer. Our consciousness is experiencing different material bodies, but we ourselves who are experiencing these different material bodies, we're always the same. No one will walk in here as Peter and walk out as Jane. Now our body may be different. In other words, we walk in here as Peter, and maybe, well, I guess more apt would be Paul. It's not that we walk out. We walk in here, they say, who are you? We say Peter, and we walk out, and because our body has changed, now we're Paul. No, whatever change our body has undergone, it doesn't make any difference. We'll still think we're Paul, although we have a different body. So, our only real choice in life is whether we decide to serve this body and its dictation, because the body, along with the body, comes a whole set of desires that the body has to fulfill. Maybe we want to become the topmost dancer, we have some talent in that direction, maybe we want to become a professor, maybe there's a certain type of food we want to eat. It's all programmed as soon as we get a body. Then we have to act in that way. Now we may think we're independent, but actually we're dependent on instructions coming from others who are similarly conditioned like we are. They themselves are being forced by the material energy to act in a certain way, and they're inspiring us to act in a certain way too, under the spell of our conditioning. Now the alternative to that is to recognize that we're spiritual beings and then find out what Krishna wants us to do with this material body and our material minds and our material senses and our material intelligence. If we inquire about that and then agree to do that activity when we find out what Krishna actually wants us to do, that's called devotional service. And the result is that we obtain a different kind of consciousness called spiritual consciousness. But in order to find out what Krishna wants us to do, we have to find out from Krishna. We can't ask an ordinary person what would Krishna like us to do, because they don't know what Krishna wants them to do. Because unless Krishna tells us what he wants us to do, we can't find out. Now Krishna has told us in the Bhagavad Gita what he wants us to do, but unless we read Bhagavad Gita, we won't find out. And even if we read Bhagavad Gita, it's no guarantee we'll take the part of the Bhagavad Gita that's applicable to our particular circumstances that we're under. As William Blake once said, we both read the Bible day and night. I read black and you read white. Therefore, someone who's actually following the path as Krishna outlined can give us some information according to their experience what Krishna wants us to do. So that's one half of the equation of pleasing Krishna. Just like for the devotional service, just like any other activity actually, any other service, has two aspects. One is to find out what the person wants us to do, who we're serving, and the other is to do it in the proper attitude. For instance, if you go to a nice restaurant and you ask for, say, a samosa, with coriander chutney. Now, if the waiter brings you an apple pie instead and says, you don't really know what you want, here's an apple pie. And because it's a special apple pie, it's 10 times more than your samosa would cost. And please leave me a big tip also for my nice service. So, of course, we'll think that this service is ridiculous. I ask for one thing, and they're bringing me something completely different. Now, if they come with our samosa, and they throw it at us, here, take it. Then we'll also not be very much inclined to go back to that particular restaurant, because although they're giving us what we want, it's not exactly in the right attitude. It's like somebody coming around to serve you prasadam, and they go, whack, take it. One may have, there's not exactly the loving spirit, devotional spirit, or care and attention. So service means the right service with the right attitude. So to learn that right service with the right attitude, we have to learn it from someone who actually has that service attitude. Even in the material world, people go to these schools, the etiquette schools, learn how to put the fork on the right side. Even if you go on, if you want to become an airplane stewardess, then they teach you a certain way. You got to smile at the customers. You have to make believe you actually like them. Some kind of attitude training has to be there. So even what to speak of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's a certain type of attitude and service has to be there. Not that Krishna says, do this, and we say, you do it. I'm doing something else. That was Arjuna's problem in the battlefield Kurukshetra. He was arguing with Krishna. Now, we say Krishna is not an ordinary person. That he knows, according to Krishna, he knows past, present, and future. So how can we prove that to anyone? We can only prove that to someone if they read the Bhagavad Gita. And at least in the beginning, Krishna says, we're not this body. So that's information that you won't find in 99.9% of any other literature. Whatever novel we read, whatever reference book we read, the first thing they don't tell us is that we're eternal spiritual souls. So right away, Krishna gets some, plus there. He gets some good marks of being a potential God, giving you some potentially good information. Now also Krishna goes step by step explaining how we become conditioned by being attached to this world and the results of the world, how we're always in anxiety, trying to grab hold of fleeting material nature and control it. Like trying to enter into an ocean and trying to control its waves. You may stand there and try and grasp the waves as they're hitting you. I got you. You're not going, I finally started. And then it's madness. So trying to be a controller in this material world, being attached, what's going to happen in the material world is like being attached to which wave is going to hit you. Where the wave is going to go after it hits you. You can't do anything about it. It's going to go somewhere, but no matter how hard we try, we can't control the waves in the ocean. So this material world is like a constant flow of waves under the influence of time, and our desire to control it is just a waste of time. Therefore, when we leave it up to Krishna, and we realize that the person behind this material world is actually a nice person. He didn't put everyone here to watch them suffer, as they sometimes, in some religions, they think that you go through the pearly gates, God looks at the scoreboard and says, boy, pretty bad. What have you been doing, kid? This is it. And he picks you up, looks at you and says, too bad. And then throws you into the burning fire. Poof. And all the angels gather around and say, wow, look at him burn. That's far out. Can you throw another one in too? Or God, when someone goes through the pearly gates, God looks at the scoreboard, a Macintosh, of course. And he goes, hey, that's pretty good, kid. You did pretty well. You know, shakes your little hand. Congratulations. Gives you a little harp or a horn and goes, and you sit there forever. God is great. God is great. Wake up. God is great. Boop, boop. God is great. Then all the little souls, they go to God and say, God, can you do me a favor? And God says, yes. Can you throw me into hell? Because at least there's some rock music there. So when they have this conception of God that he's, you know, he's a nasty person, he's just thrown all these innocent souls into this horrible world because he has nothing better to do, likes to feel superior by watching others suffer. But that's not our conception of God. And that's explained also in Bhagavad Gita that we get the results of our activities. Just like if you, in a normal society, in a advanced society, actually a social responsible society, that if the government creates prisons, not because it's inviting everyone to go to prison. Please come to our prison. You can stay here for 20 years. We'll give you free, room and board. We don't have enough prisoners. Please come and help us out. Fill up the prison. No, the government's inviting people to go to the educational institution to get a moral and practical education to become useful in society. But for those who don't want to be moral, those who don't want to be useful in society, commit crimes, and the government also has to create prisons to put them into, to protect the normal citizens and to rectify the criminal behavior of those who commit crimes. So similarly, God has created the material world, not inviting the souls to come and fill it, but because there are souls who are rebelling against the Supreme, who don't like to live a normal spiritual life, don't like to live in harmony with the Supreme Person and His creation, and therefore they're put here to pretend in different ways that they're Supreme, and they don't have to listen to the Supreme. But Krishna also wants to rectify such mentality so we can live in proper harmony. In other words, if God is absolutely good, absolutely kind, absolutely blissful, absolutely knowledgeable, eternally, then any deviation from Him, His instructions, or His mood, etc., will mean that we're a little less than good, a little less than perfect. So this material world was created for those who don't want to be perfectly good, who don't want to be perfectly harmonious with the Supreme Good, and we're put here so we can create our own worlds, our own imaginary worlds, where we think that we're the Supreme in some way or another, that we're the standard of the absolute good, and that everyone should be in harmony with us. And if not, then we fight with each other to show who's actually the Supreme. In some way or another, we try to influence others to make so that they become convinced that we're Supreme. Mainly, we may become the world-class chess player, and everyone bows down to us, all the other chess players, Dandabats, master chess player. We may become an expert skater, collector of butterflies. Somehow or another, we're trying to become Supreme. So all the other butterfly collectors bow down. Namo Brahma Butterfly Collector. Namo. Somehow or another, everyone is trying to put themselves in a position where others will consider themselves superior and render them service to their gross and subtle material bodies. So here it says we have to find someone who's become aware of the fact that there is a Supreme Person who's created the world with the planets moving their orbits, who's created the sun and the moon, our power of digestion, who's in everyone's heart giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. that person, they're surrendered to the representative of that person, who surrendered to that representative of that person, who that Supreme Person has spoken Bhagavad Gita, and therefore an actual representative will simply repeat the same words or the same ideas that Krishna spoke 5,000 years ago, and tell us how to apply in a practical way those same teachings in our daily lives. So all of us are supposed to become a representative. In other words, everyone's duty in this world is to become, every human being especially, is to find out who that Supreme Person is, what he wants us to do, and then follow that out and do it. And we can find that out through Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita, and also those who are trying or aspiring to follow those words, and the explanations of those previous great devotees who have explained Krishna's teachings in various ways to help us more clearly understand his words and his intentions behind the words. So, we'll stop there. Any questions so far? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for this lecture. Recently I was with some senior devotees and I was telling them about the disciple course. We were talking about guru-disciple relationship. That we were taught and how important it is to have a living guru who can correct us and so on and give us instructions. And how important it is to get the mercy of a guru so we could connect to Parampara and get the mercy of Krishna. And somehow they didn't agree. They believed only in Srila Prabhupada, you, and Aindra Prabhu, and other gurus and... dangerous because they could cheat us. So I was really afterwards bewildered, and they said that Prabhupada didn't say that we need a living guru. So I just...
Right, you need a dead one.
I would ask you if you could maybe comment a little bit.
Well, as Srila Bhakti Thakura said, he reasons ill who thinks that Vaishnavas die, for thou art living still and sound, that Vaishnavas die to live, and living spread the holy name around. So first of all, none of our acharyas are dead, they're eternal. Second thing is that their instructions include living in the association of devotees and serving the devotees. We never heard such a philosophy that the acharyas, we serve them, and those who are trying to serve the acharyas, we don't serve them because they're not acharyas. No, we serve the instructions of the acharyas, and the acharyas give us instructions how to serve the devotees properly. Now there may be different kinds of devotees on different levels, and therefore we have to learn how to serve devotees appropriately. For instance, those who are more advanced than us, we have to learn from them how in different ways to become more advanced than we are presently. For those who are on the same level as we are in different ways, we cooperate with them to utilize our talents together, especially to spread the Sankirtan movement and to help each other become Krishna conscious. And for those who are not on the same levels that we are, then we try to inspire them and instruct them, if possible, to come to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. But never it says we don't serve the devotees, including Srila Rupa Goswami, as I said, any devotee who we see is superior to us in some way, then we should serve them if we want to develop their good qualities, or the qualities that they have that are better than us. Otherwise, how are we going to develop them? If we become envious of the devotees and refuse to serve them, then whatever good qualities they have, not only we won't gain, but even the good qualities we may have, we'll probably lose those also. And as far as the actual gurus that we're serving, there's only one ultimate guru, it's Krishna. And everyone else is representing him to different degrees. So if we reject any devotee and we don't serve them appropriately, either by respecting them within the mind or by cooperating with them or following their instructions and example, then the result is we're actually rejecting Krishna to some degree. Before we reject the guru, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we've already rejected Krishna. So I hope whoever said that, when they hear my lecture, they'll probably reject me too. Only Indra is left. But he's not here to say anything, so it's safe. Is that all right? Yeah.
One more questionable thing, because I said that we were taught at the disciple course that guru cannot change principle and the essence of devotional service, but a guru can adjust details so we would understand better philosophy and we could serve better. And they didn't agree with this. Also, they said only what Prabhupada said is correct, and only gurus who 100% follow Prabhupada's words are bona fide. And others are speculating, other gurus. So, and I was quiet because I didn't know how to react.
Well, then you have to give some example of what they're talking about. In other words, it can get to absurdity. In one interview, Prabhupada said, well, they asked Prabhupada, who will be the next initiating guru for the next 10,000 years? And Prabhupada didn't hear the answer. So he said, my spiritual master. And then he said, can you show them a picture of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta? It's not that Prabhupada was saying that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupada is going to be the initiating guru for the next 10,000 years. He just didn't hear the question properly. And therefore, he gave that answer. So, if you want to follow strictly Prabhupada's words, then he's saying that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupada will be the only initiating spiritual master for the next 10,000 years. But he said other things too. So then, all one can do is become bewildered trying to figure out what Prabhupada actually said, if you want to take everything literally. But we're already bewildered, so there's no problem. But if we try to assimilate the philosophy, then we can see that what is the essence? What is Krishna actually trying to accomplish by all these instructions? For instance, in the Padma Purana it says, Smarta Vyaksaratam Vishnura Vismarta Chatuna Kinchit Saravidi Nisedya Asyura Etiyar Eva Kinkara. That one should always remember Krishna and never forget him. That of all the rules and regulations, that this is the essence. And if one follows that, then one serves all the other rules and regulations. So it's not that there's not some goal or purpose behind what we're doing, and that we're simply doing certain things and we're not even aware of what the result might be. It's just we're doing it because that's what we're thinking that we're supposed to do. We should know what the purpose is. So the purpose is to please Krishna and to please, you know, Śrīla Prabhupāda, to please the previous acharyas. And that's not just by mechanically following their instructions. It's a question of assimilating what they've said and applying it appropriately so they actually become pleased. It's like Tejas Prabhu. He relates that when he was in New Delhi, he was the temple president and the treasurer. So all the devotees, I remember when I became the treasurer, as soon as I moved into the temple, I asked Gargamuni Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's original treasurer, for some instructions. So Prabhupada told Gargamuni that the treasurer, he takes in the money, but he doesn't give it out. So we can apply that. I was applying that also quite strictly. Tejas was also a follower of the same instructions coming from Prabhupada. And all the devotees went to Prabhupada and started to complain that we're not getting our necessities. We give Tejas money, but we can't get anything from him. So Prabhupada talked to Tejas, and Tejas said, well, I'm just trying to follow your instructions, Sri Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, do you think my instructions would disturb all the devotees? So one should have some idea what the purpose of what we're doing is. Not just blindly following the instructions. It's called niyamagraha. Either following blindly the instructions without any idea what the purpose is, or not following them at all. One should have some idea what the purpose is and then follow them. Now, we have to have instructions, but Prabhupada said different things under different circumstances, so we have to see which is applicable. What's the essence that we're looking for? But the reference is Prabhupada in his instructions, an example. Not that we invent something because we're too lazy to read Prabhupada's books or to find out what his examples are, and therefore we just do whatever we want in the name of Prabhupada. That's not good either. Niyamagraha. Or we read all Prabhupada's books and we come up with our own conclusion. We only read the part that we like. We like the part of the hen that takes the, that gives the golden egg, but we don't like the part that it has to eat. So we cut the head in half and we try to keep the part that only gives the golden egg. Anything else? Thank you very much. Krantarashi Ma Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.